So the three of us decided it would be fun to have a little audio to help kick off Inkwell.Buta, so you can actually hear our voices. And that way, as we three dip in and out based on schedule, you will get a taste of all three of us. So I thought I'd kick this off by introducing my co-authors, Etienne Wenger and John Smith, who have also become my dear friends, because you don't spend 5 months writing a book. I mean, five years writing a book with someone and not end up friends, because either you'll have absolutely disavowed each other or you'll come to love each other. And I feel the latter. and I've known both of them online since around 1997, 1998, and gradually met them face to face as well. John coming up to Seattle and me actually meeting Etienne when we were both speaking at a conference in South Africa. And I got to say that these two guys are two of my most important teachers, mentors, and at times confidants. So I'll let you guys introduce me.
Okay, well, I think that feeling is completely reciprocal. Nancy, I've learned so much from you and from the way that you look at the world. And it is right that the writing of this book has been an amazingly positive experience. It's not always like that. So that is remarkable.
So one thing I'd say about both Etienne and Nancy was that being able to see them operate online and in other settings really gave important context for writing the book. That this book very much arose from practice of working with groups, working with communities over time, and actually being able to see their moves and try them on and see, well, what can I do that's like them, was part of the learning that then I think got distilled in the book.
I'd agree, because for me, the value of writing the book was having a set of thinking partners to think about how do we do this stuff that we now call stewarding technology for communities. How does it interact or relate to the other forms of community leadership or stewardship, such as facilitation or community leaders or sponsors? Because for me, I enjoy theory, but I live in practice. And this was a chance to actually be able to explain what my practice is, because I have to tell you, every time somebody asks you, what do? I don't know how to answer, but I've gotten a little bit better through this process.
Yeah, and that's also, something that I've learned from both of you. It's very much that practice of technology stewardship, which I cannot really claim for myself, but I've seen maybe even starting with you, John, perhaps, that we started to think about your practice and then also the practice of Nancy, and we discovered, from our own, from reflecting on our experience, like Nancy said, that there is something interesting there.
Well, and that's also what caused it to not be a report. I think I think the history of the book is actually instructive to understand the journey.
Yeah, that is right. Yeah, because initially it was a report that I had written for the federal government on technology for communities, and it had become outdated, as those things very quickly become when you focus on technology, and I had approached you two to ask you if you wanted to be part of that process. And it was interesting how slowly we started to move away from a report on technology and the different systems available, and to focus on that, on what it means to be a person who is interested in both community and technology at the same time, which is very, very much what you both were doing as we were writing the book.
Yeah, but John embraced that idea, and I resisted that it was becoming a book.
Yeah, that was my taunt at a certain phase.
It seemed to me that
the point in time where I thought we were really onto something, in fact, was when Beverly Traynor read a draft and said, oh, you're talking about what I do. And that seemed like a great kind of validation.
Yeah, and I think that's also when I was able to articulate for myself why I was interested in doing this was so that it would be useful. And that became my mantra. So when I was finding it challenging, that's what I'd go back to is, let's make this useful. But it also gave me a deeper appreciation that the fact is this practice, there isn't necessarily a set of language around the practice of technology stewardship, which is the intersection between knowing enough about your community, knowing enough about technology to be able to scan, select, implement, and encourage or foster the practice around the use of that technology. So it was hard for us to talk to each other without some sort of recognition or naming. So when I'm out in the world and using this stuff in the book, I think for me, that's what I've discovered to be useful is that if there's at least a point of departure for the conversation, then we can start talking about the practice with more depth, with more usefulness, I guess, to go back to that term. And so I've actually grown into the frameworks we introduce as conceptual frameworks into frameworks for practice, such as the polarities and the nine orientations, which has had its kind of life kicked into it a little bit more with the spidergram. And all these things are available on the Technologies for Communities site, by the way. So it's been interesting to see the ideas, you know, that sort of stopped in sort of print in the book, continue to live on and evolve out in our practices.
Yeah, and that mix of recognizing a certain role, a certain function, and wanting to be practical at the same time, I think pushed us to develop a framework that would act as a kind of literacy for those people. And so the focus on technology now was, what kind of perspective on technology should people who do this, who fulfill this role, really have? And what are the conceptual frameworks that would give them that perspective? And so it's interesting that the book has evolved into basically an exploration of what is the literacy of people who do this kind of work.
You know, it's interesting. I follow some of the digital literacy work in the education field, and it's interesting to see different language, but really very similar orbits. And I hadn't really thought about that until this moment.
Interesting.
There was a class that came to the technologyforcommunities.com website, and they all commented on this one blog posting. And it struck me that the point of view that we've adopted is taking technology as a given, that every community that's trying to work and live and be together is going to use technology in one way or another. And several of these students were saying, well, that point is debatable. They were at the point of, you know, do we like technology? Can we use it or not? And so I think that's an example of it's fascinating to see these ideas in the hands of people that we don't know. It's just like, wow, that's a kind of amazing perspective to be thinking about.
And I think it reinforces this idea that the literacy of technology stewards is not primarily focused on technology. So a good technology steward could say, no, this is not a place for a technological solution. We have to have another solution.
So if we think about our inkwell.view conversation that's coming up on the well,
yeah.
What are the things that we're wondering about? What kind of questions might we want to throw out that might stimulate conversation? Is that one of them?
Well, yeah, I think, to me, the first one is, do you recognize yourself? Do you recognize things that you do in this book?
Yeah. And then another one would be, if you recognize yourself or some other person as a technology steward, does that suggest different approaches or different activities or different relationships? Does the care and feeding of your local technology steward deserve more attention?
Or is it also distributed across the community and rather than just in the hands of the steward?
Right. I think that's actually critical, because often when it is distributed, it can become so embedded in the relationships that it's almost invisible. People don't even aren't particularly thinking about it.
But it also becomes an important practice of the community when you think about community domain and practice, when you think of communities of practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that another question is, long-lived communities like The Well, what's up with technology stewardship when a community has, at least on its face, stayed on one platform for a decade or more? 25 years. Okay. So, does that kind of really violate what we're saying in the book?
Do you want to start a flame war?
Well,
no. It doesn't violate anything.
But does that make technology stewardship irrelevant when a community has decided we're not changing platforms or tools?
First of all, you're making some interesting assumptions. So this would be a good topic for conversation because, the technology platform has evolved, but B, it's not under the control of the community. It's under the control of Salon.com, which owns The Well.
And C, what our book would suggest is that at least half of the evolution that is supervised by a technology steward or whoever does it in a community are the practices around the platform. So the fact that the platform has not evolved, and actually it has, does not mean that the community has not invented new practices to learn from this technology.
And it doesn't mean that the community has stopped discussing it.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
So this could be a very interesting one from the Well perspective. I think also there's people who may be coming into the conversation who have communities that they steward, be they communities of practice or any other kind of group. And so another question I might throw in is, how do these practices look different across different configurations of people? Because I think through the exploration of the book, I know we started with a communities of practice perspective, but in our research, it helped me understand the range of interactions. I think the line that sticks most with me from the book is, technology has fundamentally changed what it means to be together, and how that impacts across all different kinds of human configurations, connection configurations, and how the practice of stewarding technology in those contexts is similar or different, and probably not or, and.
Yeah, that would be very interesting to hear from that audience, yeah.
And I know we have some technology stewards in The Well, for sure, because there's been conversations in the virtual communities conference about this for many years. So hopefully we'll get those folks to join in, because there's a lot of knowledge.
Yeah, and for us, I think it would be really useful to hear what in the framework that we have developed actually seems useful for people to do that across different contexts.
Yeah, I think there's also a question of what else is needed. Like when Cultivating Communities of Practice came out in 2002, it really struck me that the technology aspect was missing. At this point, it seems to me that there are a lot of issues missing around business models for communities, like the Salon owning The Well, or we have a lot of simple cases where a community is entirely within or appears to be entirely within corporate boundaries, but in the life of the world of humanity, communities are always messy. They always cross all kinds of boundaries, and so as technology permeates community, the money that supports both the technology and the technology stewardship, as well as other facilitation work, becomes a real important concern.
Well, now that you've talked the globe, that's probably a good place to stop.
Okay.
Yes. That was a good conversation, actually. I hope it continues online.
So we look forward to the conversation in inkwell.view, and we'll see you online.
Great.